Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we have, of course, joining us from Harvell & Collins this morning, Andrew Foster. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, we're going to deviate a little bit from the tax world today, and we're going to enter. I've got a little case here that, you know, again, kind of raised my eyebrow when I read it. And I always like to bring those, you know, to the attention of our listeners. And I think it's a good lesson where, in this particular matter, even a good faith, reasonable cause, effort, you know, sometimes can lead you astray and can, and the court can find that you violate some duty that you may have. Even if you're acting within the best of intentions and have a reasonable, rational explanation for your actions. And it's a firm reminder, what I think, that, you know, when you're put in a fiduciary role, so when you're named the executor of an estate or you're named the trustee of a trust, you know, you are held to a very high standard.
Right.
Because you are marshaling assets for the benefit of the beneficiaries of the estate, beneficiaries of a trust. And so the court does hold you at a very high standard. And even if you, like I said, have a good faith explanation for your actions, sometimes that's not good enough.
Right.
And so that's this particular case. It's actually out of South Carolina. And it's actually a fairly easily straightforward factual case. We have Deborah who dies, leaving her husband Hugh and her daughter Courtney. And Hugh is Courtney's stepdad, so not her biological father. And basically Deborah had a will, left everything 50-50 between Courtney and Hugh, and had a trust, leaving everything 50-50 between Courtney and Hugh. And Courtney was named as the executor of the estate and the trustee of the trust. And this particular action centers on the trust because the trust says, basically, sell my real property as soon as practicable after my death.
Okay.
That's what the terms of the trust says.
And
then distribute the proceeds 50-50 between Courtney and Hugh. And so Hugh, you know, says, okay, Courtney, you're the trustee of this trust. You need to go ahead and sell the real property.
Right.
And she responds, well, that's fine, but I need to wait for the notice to creditors period to expire, which whenever you run an estate, then you have to give notice to all the creditors to let them come forward. In North Carolina, it's a 3-month period of time that the creditors have to come forward. In South Carolina, it happens to be a 6-month period of time.
Oh, really?
To come forward. So basically, she says, no, Hugh, I'll pump the brakes a little bit here. I don't sell the property until after the notice of creditors period runs. Just one problem with that. You know, an estate's an estate, and a trust is a trust. And so while estate assets, you know, and this is a common theme that we tell our clients, you know, don't distribute any estate assets prior to the expiration of the notice to creditors period.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Because you have to make sure if you do distribute those assets, you got to go then get them back from the beneficiaries. And a lot of times, once you distribute them, they are gone. So that is a very, very, you know, important rule relative to estate administrations is that notice to creditors period is a critical time period where we are gathering information regarding assets. And we're also figuring out what debts the decedent has. And we don't want to distribute assets during that period.
So where does the trust play into this?
But that's exactly right. But the trust is a different entity.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. And the trust says, you know, sell the property as soon as practicable. And there is no notice of creditors period that you run for a trust.
Right.
And so what the court did in this particular matter, Ben, is they said, they looked at the two different entities and they said, well, that's fine. If the house was in the estate, then you're bound by the notice of creditors period. The problem with this one is
it wasn't.
The house is in the trust.
Yeah.
And the trust says sell the house as soon as practicable. And so the court actually finds that Courtney violated her fiduciary duty by failing to begin the process to sell the home, even though her logic, you know, well, hey, I want to wait for the notice of creditors period to expire.
Mm-hmm.
Seems very, you know, seems very reasonable. But the problem she ran into, and where this is very, it's very technical, and why I believe that, you know, it's so important when someone passes away, especially when you have a step parent involved,
right,
or step children involved, or half brothers and sisters, or any type of relationship. Because it's obvious here, you know, Hugh was getting impatient. And what does he do? He files a lawsuit. You mm-hmm. know, that's what his response was, is to file a lawsuit saying breach of fiduciary duty against.
Now this was the stepfather,
correct? Yeah.
And so because she didn't act sooner than 3 months just to start the process, there's just no guarantee that it would actually sell during that time, right?
That is what the South Carolina Court of Appeals said. It said if she simply would have begun the process, mm-hmm. then she wouldn't be in breach of her fiduciary duty. But just by basically doing nothing,
mm-hmm.
she's violating the express terms of the trust, which say sell the property as soon as practicable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ben, I think the lesson from this, the take home is number one, you got to know the difference between entities. You know, an estate's an estate. Like I said, a trust right. is a trust. There's certain, the estate's bound by the notice of creditors rule. The trust is not bound by the notice of creditors rule. So that distinction was lost at the beginning of this file and led her to go a bit astray.
I would think her attorney, though, might argue, well, 6 months is still practical.
You know, so. And I think that's probably a reasonable argument, in all mm-hmm. honesty, is to say, look, you know, and again, was she acting in good faith?
Yeah.
Was she acting what I consider to be reasonably?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times, Ben, when we see breach of fiduciary duty actions against trustees or against executors, bad faith is involved.
Well, is she both the trustee and the executor?
She is.
So you know, she could say, look, it was practical to wait 6 months because I was busy with the estate.
Yeah.
I would have made that argument.
And guess what? The court says you violated the express terms mm-hmm. of the trust. And I think mm-hmm. that's where lesson number two is that the trust document controls.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is in that trust, if you see words like immediately,
mm-hmm.
if you see words like, in this particular case, as soon as practical.
Soon as. Yeah, I mean, that's the definition there.
So the issues with those words are, mm-hmm. is they have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And the court is going to hold you to account for those particular words, which require you to take action, you know, at a given time, or at least tells you when you need to take your action, i.e. as soon as practical, immediately. You got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's where I think it becomes very critical to get, you know, legal help, get mm-hmm. a lawyer involved, you know, give us a call at Harvell and Collins, set up an appointment. You know, you get some tragic circumstances, Ben, where you get people who, we had just someone in our office this past week who, you know, I was going to call a lawyer,
yeah,
but I didn't quite do it.
Right.
And then next thing you know, it's 8-9 months after the person's died and mm-hmm. some negative things have happened, things that frankly we can't undo at this point in time. Mm-hmm. But we need to get a handle on the situation, and we need to advise moving forward to make sure nothing else, mm-hmm. you know, happens that's negative to, you know, to this family. So that's where I think we get a good lesson here, which is, you know, if Courtney could have come to our office and would have said, you know, hey, look, I'm the trustee of this trust, I'm the executor of this estate. You know, one of the first things I would have told her would have been, if she said, what do I need to do with the real property? I said, you need to list the property for sale.
Yes.
I mean, right. You know, and the reason for that's because, again, the trust governs the real property.
Is there
the estate assets are governed by the estate and are subject to that notice of creditors period.
You know, given this case, you can look back at it and say, but is it ever advisable to have somebody, a different person be the trustee than the executor?
Sometimes, you know, we really like powers of attorney, so durable mm-hmm. powers of attorney, those individuals that would handle your financial affairs during life if you're unable to do so,
mm-hmm.
be your executor.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times they're the ones who are most familiar with your financial situation, and they can kind of transition into the executor role very easy. You know, when we talk about trustees, you know, we always look for what I'd call the logical person involved, mm-hmm. which the logical person is, you know, if we're talking about trust for children, the parents,
right?
You know,
right.
Unless you want to check and balance. And in that case, maybe mm-hmm. it is another family member that steps in as the trustee. In this particular one, my guess is this sets up so well for a third party to be an independent third party. When you have a biological child and you've got a step parent.
Yeah, you got a bunch of limbs to the tree here
now. You got it. And so, a lawyer, a family friend, someone who can be independent in nature and listen to both sides would probably be the ideal person to handle this particular trust. Because, you can just sense in reading this the animosity between Hugh, the stepdad, and Courtney, the biological daughter. Because, again, had it been a biological father in Courtney, probably not going to get sued. Probably not going to be any issues there. But when you had this non, biological blood, relationship, that's when things can go off the rails and can go off the rails very quickly. And Lord knows they end up in the South Carolina Court of Appeals over not selling a house soon enough. It's pretty wild stuff.
Yeah. Now, did you know from the case that the house went into this trust? There was a reason they were putting this house into the trust.
It was just as titled in the name of the trust. Mm-hmm. Common way to hold your real property. Just to again, sometimes it's good to keep it out of your estate.
Right.
And then ease of transition.
For a variety of reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why it's good to hold real property in trust. Mm-hmm. So. In this particular one, it's just a lesson that even reasonable, good faith actions can still get you in court. Mm-hmm. So get that legal advice and make sure that you're minding your P's and Q's and dotting every I and crossing every T.
And, of course, that legal advice can be had at Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law. You can go online at harvellandcollins.com. You can listen to past shows there and bone up on the questions that you want to ask when you come in and make that appointment as well, too. So give them a call or go online at harvellandcollins.com. You can also email Andrew at afoster@harvellandcollins.com.